From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
A shocking outcome in this past weekend's presidential primary election in Argentina. There was also an election in Guatemala. Not so many surprises there. For that and more, in the Latin America Caribbean region, we spoke with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, from Managua, Nicaragua, on Monday. Mauricio Macri, take that. Everyone there was shocked, apparently, including him.
Well, at least he had the good grace to very, very early on acknowledge that he and his Cambiemos party had had a bad election, which is putting it mildly. I think we need to be careful with that result, because if you look at it carefully, one of the reasons that they did so well talking about these so-called open, simultaneous and obligatory primary elections that took place in Argentina on Sunday, in which the party called the Frente de Todos, that's everybody's front, the front for everybody, led by Alberto Fernandez, who used to be Nestor Kirchner's, he was Nestor Kirchner's main policy advisor in Nestor Kirchner's first administration, and then subsequently he worked with Cristina Fernandez too, but I think they had a falling out when Cristina Fernandez did her second term.
Yeah.
But anyway, Alberto Fernandez is the presidential candidate. Cristina Fernandez, they made the surprise announcement a couple of months ago that she was going to be the vice presidential candidate.
Right.
And one of the reasons they did that was because they needed to convince this social democrat character called Sergio Massa to join the Frente para Todos. Now, Massa did that. And I think that one has to be very, very careful about being over-optimistic about this result. Because who was it that said a week is a long time in politics? British Prime Minister Harold Wilson, somebody like that. A week is a long time in politics, and there's still, 2 months, 3 months? The elections are at the end of October, I think.
Yeah.
So these primaries, what are they designed to do? That what they're designed to do is to define who are going to be the final candidates for the real presidential election. So any party that gets less than 1.5% of support in these primaries that Argentina just held, they're eliminated and they can't stand for as candidates in the presidential election in October. So between now and October, what I expect Macri to do is to make a very strong move to separate Massa from the Frente para Todos. Now, in the 2015 election, what made it possible for Mauricio Macri to win, he had no platform, he had no policies.
Right.
Now, and people didn't really know. All he said was, "We'll make Argentina prosperous."
Right.
And that was enough, given the economic climate at the time, for him to squeak through with a 2% win. I think it was a 2% win
last time
against the candidate of Cristina Fernandez's party. I think his name was Daniel Scioli, and I think he was a terrible candidate actually. But that, who knows? But the reason that Macri won was because Massa refused to endorse the candidate of Cristina Fernandez's party.
Right.
That's why Macri won.
Right.
And so now you have this guy Massa apparently in alliance with Alberto Fernandez and Cristina Fernandez. And I don't think that's a very solid alliance.
Yeah, we're going to see how that goes. I know, because last time it was and there was 12,980-something thousand votes to 12,309,000 votes. It was like 51 and change to 48 and big change percents.
Yeah.
And You know, that's out of, that was, that's like a 25 million vote out of a 32 million electorate. You know, the turnout was 80%, but it's, there's room for, if there's enthusiasm, and our understanding when we were discussing it after, you know, back in late 2015 was that, you know, there were some folks on the left that sat on their hands because they, you know, wanted more aggressive, you know, posture to be taken by, they wanted from, you know, from Christina and from her ex, you know, her late husband, and from the party in general. And that was something that we had seen earlier that year expressed in Venezuela as well, leading to the right actually capturing the National Assembly. And so,
right.
But the lesson apparently, like the folks on CNBC and stuff, you know, the real right-wing supporters, they had to admit that what the lesson that they saw, this is the best positioning they could get, is Argentinians do not want austerity. That's the take-home message.
Like, well, golly, aren't they perceptive?
Yeah, wow, really?
no, and so yeah, and that's what we were saying right from the start, right from the minute we started discussing that election result. We said, and within 2-3 years, and everything's going to come on top, and Macri's policies are going to fall apart. And of course, they did.
Right.
So why is anybody surprised that there's been this some tremendous reaction against Mauricio Macri and his right-wing neoliberal austerity policies, selling out Argentina to foreign buyers? And that's what he's done.
Yep.
And to the IMF, which is the same thing.
Even worse. It's even worse because it was also to like the vulture funds. There was that one, you know, was a $12 billion or whatever claim that was made by a vulture fund for debt that everybody recognized was discharged, was gone. And it was just that, you know, the holder of this debt that bought it for pennies on the dollar insisted that it was valid and it was making a political point with it. And Macri decided to honor it. And not only did he honor it, he sent the damn check back with Obama when Obama visited Argentina.
Right.
At face value.
Right. No, Macri is completely shameless. And right now, even his family businesses are being investigated for improper procedures in the assignation of public contracts to his family's companies. So, you know, he's so shameless. And that even an Argentinian justice system that's supposedly under his control feels bound to take proceeding against his own family companies and government officials involved in favoring them unduly.
It's just, it's too indefensible. Yeah, I mean the things are so bad. And now the writing is on the wall that, hey, guess what? Macri might lose the election, that people are saying, well, you know what? Yeah, maybe he's the president. Maybe it's a good idea to keep his goodwill, but this stuff is so crooked and his legs are so shaky that I better talk about it, because otherwise I'm going to be in the dock with him in a couple months.
Yeah, there's all of that. There's going to be a lot of that.
Yep.
But the thing about this a primary election on Sunday is that in any sane world, in any rational world, it would be simply a formality that the election in October will then reflect that same result.
Right.
You had a very high turnout, 75%, partly because the primaries are supposedly obligatory.
Right.
People are supposed to be obliged to vote, as I understand it. That's why they're called pasos, that the O means obligatory. And then, it's like a nationwide opinion poll run by the electoral authority. So that should be definitive, and that should define what happens in October.
Mm.
But given the kind of dirty tricks of which Mauricio Macri and his team, with their U.S. backers, are past masters. And given the fact that Sergio Massa is kind of And I don't regard him as a reliable ally at all. I know, let's hope that he does stick to the undertakings that he's obviously made to Alberto Fernandez and Cristina Fernandez and their team. We'll see.
Right.
But even in the event that Massa, if Massa doesn't change sides, if he doesn't, then there's no way on a level playing field that Macri is going to win on October. Forget it.
Right.
He's toast.
Right.
But even if Massa were to betray the trust that he's received from Alberto and Cristina and their team, and that itself doesn't necessarily mean that Macri would still be able to win.
Right.
The idea would be that separating Massa would divide the anti-Macri vote thus allow Macri to squeeze in again. But, and I think the popular reaction against Massa, given the absolutely extreme, desperate economic circumstances in which Argentina is now facing, and I think that there would be a very strong reaction against Massa if he were to do that. And if he were to do that, I think Alberto Fernandez would still beat Macri. But we'll see.
Yeah.
And the same's true. And I think it's important to be cautious. And I'm very optimistic that Macri will lose in October. Also in Uruguay, there are elections in Uruguay. I think that the Frente Amplio, which are kind of a generally progressive political force in regional continental terms. And I think they're likely to win a fourth term.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also that in Bolivia, the odds are that Evo Morales is going to win a fourth term. And I think we have to be very cautious about this because the United States and their local allies know the other things being equal, they've had it.
Yeah.
And their electoral chances are probably going to be finished for at least another 10 years. Nobody's ever going to, Macri and no right-wing politician is ever going to be able to make people forget in the next 10 years what Macri and his team did to them.
Right.
So you can practically guarantee a more or less progressive government in Argentina.
Well, how long did it last? You had how many? You had two full terms of Nestor, right?
And then it was 2002 to 2016.
Yeah. Okay. So there's 14 years. That's how long it took. 14 years.
Yeah.
You had two full terms of Lula. A full term of Dilma, and then she was elected to another term. She was removed, like, with chicanery. But so that, again, is 16 years, it would have been. I mean, so they took her out, it was 12 years.
Right.
In Venezuela, it's been since 1998, with a little sidestepping in only one election. I mean, every election the Socialist Party of Venezuela won, with the exception of the National Assembly election in 2015, and that's under a state of siege.
Referendum too under Chavez.
Yeah, and you look at that. Yeah,
not by much. So in 25 elections, they won 23.
Yeah, so I mean, just in general, to suppose that having set the country on its feet. And then, after 16 years, to let the enthusiasm for that wane, maybe some tactical errors or sabotage or whatever, altogether, you end up with Macri. You get reintroduced and reminded of that which it was that you abandoned before. Yeah, I think 10 years is a conservative estimate.
Yeah, right. Well, let's hope so, because then it'll take at least 5 years to undo the damage that Macri has done to Argentina.
Right.
And I think it took all of Néstor Kirchner's first term into the next presidential period.
For sure.
Before Argentina was able to clear its massive debt, negotiate a deal with foreign bondholders and finally get the economy into a phase of economic growth that enabled some redistribution of wealth. And that, so let's see, and that's likely to be the same pattern, assuming that Alberto Fernandez wins in October. And then the other election that took place, it's worth noting that, and we may have discussed this about four or five programs ago, it's worth noting that if there's a progressive government re-elected in Uruguay, if Evo Morales is re-elected in Bolivia, and if Alberto Fernandez wins in Argentina, that will significantly change the regional geopolitical scheme of things in terms of support for Venezuela, particularly now that López Obrador has made very clear that Mexico's foreign policy he's not going to let himself or his foreign policy be co-opted by the United States. Right. So if Argentina, what's Argentina's population? Is it 40 million, 44 million, something like that?
Yeah, right.
And it's a big economy in the Latin American context. So that'll make a big difference to the geopolitical support available to defend Venezuela.
Right.
And that's probably one of the reasons why the United States is really intensifying the sanctions against Venezuela now.
Right.
Because they fear that in 6 months, 9 months' time, the configuration of power and of support that they have in the region will look very different to what it does now.
Right.
Because there are other elections happening as well.
Yeah.
And the election yesterday in Guatemala was quite a contrast to the process in Argentina.
Yeah.
Where people, and there a guy called Alejandro Giammattei.
Right.
The right winger.
A right winger, yeah.
He was in a runoff against a kind of social democrat style politician called Sandra Torres. And he won by a surprisingly large margin. I think he won with 57% of the vote, some against whatever it was, around 40 for Sandra Torres.
It was a really poor turnout, though. There was a 42% turnout.
Oh, I saw 35%.
Yeah.
35% was the figure I saw.
Well, it's a CNN's number. But the so it's probably 35%. This is after the last election. You had Jimmy Morales ran, the comedian ran, and it was going to big changes, put an end to corruption, somebody from outside the system, etc. And so they ended up going back for some guy who was about as, you know, strong a symbol, closely identified a symbol of official right-wing corruption as anybody, and with a really low turnout, meaning just about everybody except those that support corrupt right-wing politicians stayed home.
Right. And that is the very depressing reality in Guatemala. In Guatemala, you've got over 50% of the population officially living in poverty.
Yeah.
Right?
And you know, it's going to... Here's the contradiction, because I know where you want to take this. We'll go there in a second. Back into the regional context, even though you end up with this, you know, step backwards in terms of, a hard right-wing, you know, knucklehead as the president, in the larger picture for what Trump and the U.S., you know, the more permanent U.S. Government has been trying to do in the region with this whole rollback of the pink tide, et cetera, that they've been working on and trying to do. Trump has been looking at Guatemala as like a linchpin for cutting the immigration flow to the United States through Central America. And as a matter of fact, it's going to fail dismally now. His plan doesn't have a chance of any success, and may end up adding half of Guatemala's population to that stream of migrants coming to the United States. So whatever little political benefit they gain elsewhere by putting a right-winger back in power or a hard right-winger in power in Guatemala, they're going to lose by completely undermining his showcase policy towards Latin America with respect to immigration.
Yeah, and I think it's worth looking a bit harder at what's actually going on as a result of that election. In a sense, nothing.
Right.
But in a sense, I haven't seen Giamatti's political program. In fact, none of these right-wing politicians have any political program. One of the reasons that the Sandinista Front here in Nicaragua has been so successful ever since they took office back in January 2007 is that they took office with a national human development plan. And that plan said, well, we're going to, over the next 3-4 years, we're going to build this many hospitals, we're going to build this many schools, we're going to do all these things, very specific things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then and every 4 or 5 years, they update the plan. And so they publish it. So people know exactly what the government is proposing to do, and they explain how they're going to fund it. You don't get anything like that in the kinds of elections that you see even in a place like Argentina. Mauricio Macri, he had no government plan. There was no plan. It was just, oh, we'll make you more prosperous. That was his platform.
Right.
And so it's the same with all these right-wing leaders. They sell you smoke and mirrors, like, and people are foolish enough to fall for it. And in this case, in Giamatti's case, and I think Sandra Torres is probably right to say that there was significant electoral fraud against her, because even the Guatemalan Electoral Tribunal acknowledged that their election system was flawed after they got so many complaints, particularly from the Guatemalan indigenous candidate in the first round of the elections. They got so many complaints about fraud, and they had to admit that their electoral system left a lot to be desired, right, to put it mildly.
Right.
So then you have that, but you also have, because Sandra Torres is a moderately progressive candidate, you also had this absolute wall-to-wall assault in media terms against her as a candidate.
Right.
And Giamatti, one of his campaign promises is he was going to get Sandra Torres locked up for corruption.
Right.
So he personally was smearing her all through the election campaign. And all the right-wing media, which is virtually all of the right of the media,
all the media, right,
did the same.
Right.
So you have to look at the election in that context too. And then if you look at it in the terms that you alluded to earlier, and what was Jimmy Morales? Jimmy Morales offered change, anti-corruption, etc., etc. Nothing changed.
Right.
GMT's, it's like, I mean, it's like Groundhog Day. And Giamatti is saying, well, when I get into power, I'll prioritize a drive against corruption.
I'm going to make you rich and famous. Well,
right.
I'll show you how. I'm not going to tell you how. I'm just going to do it. They had 3.3 million people voted. Okay, 3.3 million people voted in a country of 17 million.
Right.
That's like 5% of the adult population.
And people are just completely apathetic because they've been lied to time after time.
The change is nothing. Oh, I got to go pull that lever again. Jeez, we didn't even get any jokes out of the last one. I thought he was going to give us a little, you know, like a free stand-up show or something.
Sorry.
You know? So it's, you know, that I guess that's why they voted for Jimmy Morales. They figured, you know, every third or so would be like a little stand-up routine and free entertainment. If I'm going to be hungry, at least I can laugh once in a while.
And with Giamatti, and it's going to be Morales without the jokes.
Right, exactly, exactly. He is the joke.
So and then what does that mean in terms of the United States and regional policy and so on? Well, and I think the policy that you were talking about in relation to the United States, President Trump hoping that Guatemala would help solve the migration problem, was the so-called secure third country. I think that's
right.
The policy. And Jeannette is likely to accept that. He's likely to go along with that. And right. I suspect, I'll be very surprised if he doesn't turn out to be a total U.S. stooge.
Yeah, that's true. But the problem is that Guatemala itself has such huge problems that, you know, maybe they're planting their stooge there, but it's not topsoil, you know, and it's not concrete. It's like they're planting it in sludge, and there's a huge current running through it. So the problem is that while they're, you know, this guy's proposing and implementing this, that, and the other policy that's supposed to help the U.S. keep people, you know, in Guatemala instead of in making it through Mexico to the United States, Guatemalans are going to start lining up with the people who are in there to say, yeah, we're coming with you.
Well, yeah, and a lot of Guatemalans have already done so.
That's right.
I think
exactly.
of migrants over the last couple of years have been from Honduras, but they've also been from El Salvador and also Guatemala. And I think when Giamatte is saying that he's going to prioritize a drive against corruption, I think that's code for him saying that he's going to cave in to the UN Anti-Corruption Commission that was essentially imposed by the United States some years ago to try and put a control on, to intervene directly via this anti-corruption motif.
Right, right. It's like a wage cap for crooks.
Yeah.
It's like the U.S. is like, look, we're tired of paying these guys $1 million. We want to pay them $150. So let's have the U.N. come in and say $150 is a wage, $1 million is corruption, no more corruption, and everything looks good and it smells nice. That's essentially what the game is. That's afoot. We got 2 minutes left. I just want to make a quick, piece. Let you, you know, tell us a little bit about the lawfare attack on Correa that continues in Ecuador, and maybe get to the blockade against Venezuela.
Well, and that was another important story last week. Lenin Moreno's government has managed to find a judge who will issue a judgment. Seeking preventive prison against Rafael Correa on completely trumped-up charges, just the same as Jorge Glass. There is no evidence against Rafael Correa's former vice president, Jorge Glass.
Right.
And there's no evidence against Correa. Correa himself has done interviews with HispanTV and other outlets explaining how totally ridiculous these charges are. But his lawyers have appealed, but because the Ecuador's justice system is so corrupt now and so politicized, it's unlikely that he'll get a good result. And it's perfectly possible that over the next month, 2 months, we'll see Rafael Correa extradited back to Ecuador, and we'll see him in the dock, in prison, because that's what they've asked for, preventive prison. It's supposed to be in relation to corruption charges involving the notorious Brazilian engineering Odebrecht company.
Right.
But that's all nonsense, and absolutely zero evidence to connect Correa with any of that.
Right. And now, and then very quickly to Venezuela, we may be looking at one of those moments like 1962. It's going to be interesting to see how and if this thing spins out. But apparently the United States has decided that they are going to blockade Venezuela in one fashion or another. They're calling it a quarantine and not a blockade. Somebody must have watched one of those 13 Days in October movies or something. But, you know, that...
When we were talking about, when was it in January, we were saying, what kind of defeat will the U.S. suffer in Venezuela?
And hopefully it's not going to be a defeat in nuclear war. And I think that's how we're going to introduce it next week, because we're out of time. But it looks like they're trying to trace themselves back to those few moments before there was an actual war and then relive the next part. And I think we were lucky to get out of it the last time. We got to make sure we don't sit here again.
I think this is a defining moment for the first stage of a strategic defeat for the United States.
I think so too, and hopefully we can
to see that repeat. All right. We'll speak with you again next week. Thank you so much, Tony. Appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot, Don. Talk to you soon.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.